You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Shaka Hislop. Very intimate today, Stay Shaq. We also welcome to the programme, thousands of miles away, but still very close to our hearts. Nada Manua is with us. Please, jealousy wishes on this date as well. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has been given a new contract by Manchester United. Of course, he's going into what is fourth season with the club. There is progress when you take a look at the finishes in the Premier League. Sixth in that season that he took over, second, of course, last year. Before we get the reaction from the boys, to what Mark Ogden had to say.
Well, I think, first of all, you know, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had 1 year left on his contract this summer, so United had to give him a new deal. I think he's made progress since he took over from Jose Mourinho. I think the progress has been steady rather than spectacular. But, you know, United probably couldn't say, you've still got to prove yourself, Ole, going into the final year of his contract. They had to give him a new deal. But I think you have to say, why 3 years? What is the idea with the length until 2024 with the option of a further year? Because that's three more years. You know, that's rewarding Solskjaer for his slow progress. United haven't won anything since 2017 before Solskjaer arrived. And I do think that it's too long a contract for a guy that has yet to win something. I think really he has to win something next season. He can't keep knocking on the door and, you know, losing semi-finals or losing finals or finishing second. He has to win something. And I think When I question the length of the contract, in recent months, Pep Guardiola signed a new contract at Man City till 2023. Thomas Tuchel won the Champions League with Chelsea, signed a new contract this summer till 2023. You know, Pep obviously has won several trophies at Man City. This week, Maurizio Pochettino signed an extension at PSG till 2023. So if PSG, Chelsea and Man City want to give their, you know, stellar name managers a two-year extension, why have Man United given Ole Gunnar Solskjaer a three-year deal when he's not won anything? He's made progress, but for me, for a club of Man United's stature, the progress has been too slow.
I think it is interesting. As Mark's saying there, you know, the 3 years seems like it's a very long time, especially when you compare that to other managers. But it seems like United, they want to try and show that there's a level of stability there. But it's interesting because the deal itself, I've seen more people who don't support Man United celebrating it more than, say, United fans themselves. And that kind of, you know, that kind of says a lot. You know, it's a bit cheeky, but, you know, ultimately United haven't won anything in that time. So people don't necessarily fear him or fear the club at this moment in time. Obviously, they're looking to progress from those positions. And, you know, finishing second last year, obviously their eyes will be set on winning the league this year. But if United have a bad year this year, it would seem strange to have a manager there in play, you know, who would have two more years left on his contract. So I don't get it. I don't get it in terms of the length. But, you know, it's I suppose there's just a lot of pressure on Solskjaer this year because, as I say, if it goes wrong, it would make no difference whether he had a year left or three. I think he'll probably be out the door.
What struck me from Mark's answer initially was the fact that he said they had to give him a new contract because he was in his last year.
Yeah.
Why?
That's a strange thing. I don't know. Because in all honesty, unless Manchester United somehow have a 19-point gap by November, Solskjaer's going nowhere. Mm. Let's be perfectly honest here. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is leaving Manchester United. There's no other big clubs in European football would have him. I'd go so far as to say I don't think he walks away from United. I don't think there are any other Premier League clubs who would just take a chance on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer unless, as I say, the incredible happens between now and December. So to Mark's point or to your question, I don't get that either. Okay, but if Manchester United decide that, yes, we do want to take this opportunity to sign him to a new contract, I don't get the length of it. I said when he first became Manchester United manager, I would be surprised if there wasn't a rather inexpensive get-out clause in that contract somewhere. And I'll double down. While I've seen it reported nowhere, if there isn't a rather inexpensive get-out clause to Manchester United with this contract with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, that club is just being terribly run.
Right.
Because, again, to the point, nobody really wants Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So what are you protecting yourself against?
Nathan, what was striking, people supporting this contract were putting out stats that he's accrued more points than any other club, with the exception of Liverpool and Manchester City, since he's taken over. This is Manchester United. You're celebrating being third best. It seems very, very strange and very different to the side that we grew up watching.
Yeah, 100%. I think those the Premier League for the first probably 15, 20 years was one which basically you'd have to mention Manchester United every time you spoke about it, because they were the dominant force within it. But the fact that they've not won anything for probably, I think, 4 or 5 years now is crazy to see. And when we talk about Solskjaer coming in to be part of, you know, this growth and development of Manchester United, it's absolutely not something that we're used to seeing. And it's, you know, it doesn't feel right. I think if United have another 3 years in the same way that they've just had in the past, you know, what are Manchester United as a football club? You know, off the field, they are one of the biggest teams and clubs in the world. But if you're happy to be behind Liverpool and Man City, who, by the way, are probably your two biggest rivals in the league, then that kind of sets the wrong tone. I think the fan base itself, they're not used to that. You know, being a Man City fan and being an ex-Man City player, you know, we used to get laughed out of the city whenever there was a derby coming up. We were a complete laughing stock. So to see that other side of Man United now, where they almost feel like, you know, they're not, like, you shouldn't mention the word progressing with Manchester United. Mm. It should just be success. That's how everybody's seen them for the years gone by. So I don't know, it's weird, but you know, as every year passes and City bring more success, and as Mark Ogden tried to hint at there, Pep's won several trophies. I think several kind of downplays it a little bit, as Pep's won a lot of trophies. You know, I quite enjoy that United aren't necessarily at the best right now. It just makes it feel that little bit better.
How would you define a successful season for Manchester United then coming up under Solskjaer, Nadim?
For me, I think they've reached the point where it's plain and simple. They have to win something. They have to win something, you know, and even with the winning something, they have to look convincing in doing so. Mm. Because if they finish second in the Premier League again, then time's gone by. If a manager was finishing second, third, fourth, year in, year out, they'd probably look to replace him with somebody else. But this is United, who are trying to get there and trying to compete. And they might not necessarily have the same type of squad as Man City now, but they have stability. They've got a player base there which has been playing for a good few years now, and they have to be winning stuff. You know, the United fans themselves, I doubt they'll be happy with talking about progress. I'd say they have to win something. I don't know if it's going to be that easy, but they have, in my opinion, they have to win something, because for too long now they've not been part of that conversation. And in the meantime, you're having teams, for example, with all due respect to them, like Leicester City, who have won stuff. Mm. So questions for me need to be asked, because which club would you expect to have won more in the last couple of years, Man United or Leicester City?
Good stuff, gents. As always, thank you very much. For more from Nadim and Shaka, be sure to check out Extra Time over on our YouTube page. The boys, of course, staying late to answer your tweets.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Meanwhile, the US women registered their first win of the Olympics, thrashing New Zealand by 6-1. Ali Krieger joins us to reflect on that win. Caitlin Murray over on ESPN.com described this as a flattering scoreline for the US women.
Yes, it was definitely a great win and a good 3 points to move on, hopefully into the next rounds, guaranteed. I still do think that, you know, some players are not playing with the same confidence and obviously team cohesion that we've seen before. That doesn't mean that they aren't going to find that in the next game or in the next rounds. But I do think there were, you know, still some players, you know, missing that normal confidence that we always see on the ball. But it's a great 3 points, and that's what they needed. And 6-1 was a good performance and a good moving into the next game against Australia.
Who caught the eye for you?
Rose Lavelle and Lindsey Horan, I think, had they played really brilliantly. I think Lindsey scoring that goal in her 100th cap was an impact player today. And Rose, I felt like she was more in that central role, getting into the attack, beating lines. She was all over in midfield, even at one point in the sixth, defending. So I saw her movement a lot today, and I thought she was much better and you know, good impact into the attack to create those opportunities.
We saw a number of changes, of course, from this side, from the defeat against Sweden. Who has played their way into the starting 11 for that game against Australia midweek?
You know, I think that was somewhat always planned. I do think that it's important to, you know, give some of those mainstayers a rest in order to be fully fit and ready to go versus Australia. But I think that, you know, we have such a strong team that I think any player is going to perform well against Australia, and he can count on any of them and trust them that they're going to do their job and do it well. I do think that Carly Lloyd might be in that number nine. You know, we didn't see her in that position in the first game, but I do think Alex coming in and scoring another goal was great. But I do think Carly, you know, can be a little bit more effective just coming 2 feet, receiving and laying off for other players like a Kristen Press and a Megan Rapinoe to get in behind and create the attack.
You must have spoken to a lot of the players after that defeat against Sweden. They weren't pulling any punches, were they? Certainly talking to the media, saying that they'd let themselves down. Obviously, you had Rapinoe coming out and talking about the fact, well, we just need to be able to pass the ball to each other. That's a start. I'm just wondering how the morale in the camp has been over the last few days, given that they've suffered a defeat, which, of course, is something they're not used to at all.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, the players themselves, like I said before, are going to recognize that it's not good enough and they need to make the change because we are the ones out on the field. So they understand what needs to be done. They understand that they need to turn it on a little bit more mentally and have a little bit more urgency and tenacity in their game. And I think that we saw that more today. But Australia is going to be a bigger test. And they, you know, one of our former national team coaches, Tony Gustafsson, is the head coach there and understands, you know, obviously a lot of our style and a lot of our players. And so there's other players on the Australian team who are familiar with most of our players who have played in the NWSL. And so I do think that it's going to be a really difficult matchup. We can't go into any of these games thinking that we're automatically going to win. So the players do know that there needs to be more. There needs to be more confidence on the ball. There needs to be a willingness to want to succeed. There needs to be a better mentality and that winning mentality and focus that we've seen the past 6 months that I don't know if we've seen that the past 2 games.
The way that qualifying works, obviously, it's not really do or die against Australia. I'm just wondering how that might affect the team selection and how you would approach this game.
I would approach this game wanting to win and setting a tone moving on into the next rounds. You want to play your team that will continue to play through the next rounds, you know, depending on any kind of niggles that some players have. But it is important to keep that squad together and build that consistency going into the games that you know, you must win. And so, yes, you do have to worry about resting maybe some of the older players who don't necessarily, you know, play 90 minutes as often as they used to. So that obviously has to be, you know, taken care of. But that's more so into the attack and the forward line. But I do think that defensively and in that number six role, we really need to see that consistency in the U.S. moving into the rounds that truly matter.
Finally, I've got to ask you about tonight's game. Obviously, Orlando in action against Lyon. You're going to win that, no problem, obviously.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we got it in the bag.
Perfect. Great stuff. Well, enjoy this evening. Thank you very much, Ali, as always, for your time. As I mentioned, Kelly Murray, of course, all over the Olympics. Be sure to go over to the website and check out her latest article.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
With 20 days to go until La Liga kicks off on ESPN, we are bringing you a club a day. We kick things off with Athletic Bilbao, a side that finished 10th last season. They kick off their campaign away against Elche as we welcome in Gemma Soler to the show. Gemma, I'm not going to say this for every team, and it sounds a bit cliche, but if I was just getting interested in La Liga, Athletic Bilbao is very appealing, isn't it? Because of its tradition and because of its proud historic ways.
Hello, Dan. Yeah, definitely is probably the most strange team nowadays playing in this modern football. They cannot sign any player who is born outside the Basque country, a foreigner player. Who is a foreigner player? That's also quite strange. It's not only the Basque country, but also Navarra and the Basque part of France. This philosophy comes from the 50s. It was forbidden to sign foreign players in Spain. Then in the dictatorship, Franco said in 1949, okay, you can sign foreign players, but the Athletic Club de Bilbao decided to keep with their philosophy. They had an amazing school. They still have one of the best football schools in Spain and probably Europe, is Lezama. They are very proud. So they decided to keep this philosophy until today. Is it true that there are little exceptions? For example, Aymeric Laporte, even Ernesto Valverde, they are players who are not born in the Basque country, but they went to football schools in this area. So they decide to open a little bit this philosophy. So then it's an extreme situation, and I think it's quite remarkable what they are doing, because it's true that last season it was bittersweet, because they played three finals, two finals of the Copa del Rey, one of the Supercopa de España. They won it against Barcelona. But in La Liga, they had ups and downs, and they finished 10th, quite far for their goal, that, of course, is to be in Europe.
It is extraordinary, as you say, in the modern world, where you've got all this money flying around and pretty much an open checkbook for most clubs regarding who they can get. For Athletic Bilbao, there is such a small sample of which they can call on, yet this is a side that have stuck with that tradition and have never been relegated. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, and if I have to tell my opinion, I think they will never do. They are so proud. Actually, it's also remarkable, but because they are one of the three teams that they have never been relegated. They have never played in second division. So this is quite important for a team that, as you say, they cannot sign. Actually, for the next season, so far they have only one signing. Pecha Ramon is not a remarkable player. And it's quite also important that the goalkeeper of Spain, Unai Simon, is a player of this club. So they are doing it quite well with these strange, extraordinary circumstances.
If you go to Bilbao, they want to talk to you about football and they want to talk to you as well about food. Pinchos is just such a brilliant idea in that you have all your tapas and then you have a cocktail stick in each of the tapas that has a colour on, and at the end of your meal, at the end of however long you've spent eating, you hand those cocktail sticks over and that tells you how much you have to pay. The food there is sublime.
Yeah, it's amazing that they have competitions, world competitions of these pinchos, and you can eat absolutely delicatessen food in at the top of a little piece of bread with that little thing that at the end of, gives you the bill. I will recommend any football lover to go to Bilbao and to go to the Pozas Street. It's the street that takes you to the new San Mamés, and you can have amazing pinchos there and also watch this beautiful new stadium, and then of course enjoy a game in San Mamés because they have one of the best atmospheres in football in La Liga.
Yeah, it would say, if I was to describe their atmosphere, I would say it's probably the most English compared to other teams within Spain, in the fact that you have the songs, you have the chanting.
Yeah, I think, definitely the more English. Yeah, I would say maybe, I'm not sure if it's the best atmosphere, the best noise, probably it's Sevilla. They are more Argentinians, I think. And then it's Atletico Madrid. They had this kind of atmosphere before in the old Vicente Calderón. Now with a new one that's a little bigger, it's a little bit different. But definitely, yeah, probably San Mamés is the most Premier League team, the most British. And they live football. They never stop cheering for a players that they believe are their own, because are their neighbors, are Basques. They are very, very proud of that tradition, and they will stick on it until the last consequences.
We mentioned, of course, they finished 10th last year. For them, their ambition this season's got to be a place in Europe somehow, yeah?
Yes, that should be at least being there, trying there. They love the kickoff competitions like Copa del Rey. They are actually, they won 23. Copa del Rey. It's quite remarkable with these circumstances. They played, apart from these 23 titles, 19 finals more. And I mentioned it before, last season, they managed to beat FC Barcelona at the final of the Supercopa de España. So it was at the beginning of January. It seemed it could be a very, very good season. They had Marcelino García Toral as a coach. He was the substitute of Asier Garitano, and at his first steps in Atletico Bilbao, they seem he could change the mentality and they could make it and try to be near the Europe positions. But it's difficult to stick with that when you compete with teams with superstars, with much more variety. They had also struggled with injuries, so they ended with not in that good shape, and they fall in that 10th position. And actually, the last month they didn't have any chance to be competing in Europe. Of course, that will be the goal for this next season, to be finishing Europe positions and also to do it good in the Copa del Rey.
There you go. I think we've pretty much told you everything you need to know about Athletic Bilbao. We'll be focused on Celta Vigo tomorrow. Gemma, before I let you go, as you're based in Barcelona, I've just got to ask what your thought is on Lionel Messi and his future. Obviously, we discussed it at length yesterday. As it stands, are we really in a situation that we might not see Lionel Messi play for Barcelona until January?
I don't think so. There, of course, has to be some operations happening. But I think FC Barcelona are working quite well in the office. They have Mateu Alemany, this member of the board, that he's very smart doing this kind of things. He did before in Valencia. He did before in Mallorca in similar economical crisis. So if someone could be able to do that, it would be Mateu Alemany and Joan Laporta. And Messi said before going to the Copa America, I want to stay, I will make sacrifices. He already done it with this pre-deal of 5 years, cutting off about 50% of his salary. So it's just a matter of administration. And yesterday in the presentation of Memphis Depay, President Laporta, it was much more optimistic, according to the conversations with La Liga, that La Liga are, of course, interested in having Messi as well. So they are trying to make all the efforts to make it happen, because all three parts, La Liga, Barcelona and Leo Messi, want to play. So I think in ESPN on the opening session on August in this Barcelona Real Sociedad, if I have to bet, I'll say we will be seeing Lionel Messi there. I think that the key day is the 2nd of August. He will finish his holidays. He will come back to Barcelona, and we will probably see the signing of the contract. And then everything will go more relaxed for especially Ronald Koeman, who is quite nervous with this situation.
Yeah, of course. It's got all of this speculation going on. There's a lot of reports, aren't there? They're looking to get rid of Antoine Griezmann and get that massive wage bill off from their accounts. Yeah, If I'm any club in the world and I've got interest in Antoine Griezmann, I know Barcelona are so desperate to get rid of him, they have put themselves in a really bad situation, haven't they?
They did, definitely. That's why yesterday in that same presentation, Joan Laporta said something like, we're not going to give Antoine Griezmann as a gift. If there is not a good offer, he will stay, he will play. I think he was sending a message of saying, no, we want Antoine Griezmann, which is not true, but he has to say that because otherwise, Dan, the teams would do what you say. I think it's complicated because any club knows about the difficult situation of FC Barcelona. So we will see. It's Antoine Griezmann. They have a little few possibilities of making money as well with Clement Lenglet, with Umtiti. He's playing the preseason with Barcelona, but he's, of course, having these physical problems. And also Ilaix Moriba. They want to keep this pearl of the cantera, of La Masia. But it's difficult because his representatives want more money. So Barcelona could be making with Ilaix Moriba something like 20 million. So we will see what's happening in the next a few days. Will be hot market here in Barcelona.
It really is quite the telenovela, isn't it? Gemma, as always, thank you very much for your thoughts. Just a reminder, ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow as we'll continue to count down to the start of La Liga. We'll be focusing on Celta Vigo. So all starts then Friday 13th, Valencia against Getafe, and then on Saturday, Real Madrid kick off their campaign away against Alaves. Sunday is mentioned at the Camp Nou with Barca against Real Sociedad. Before that, Atleti start the defence of their title away against Celta Vigo. All these games, in fact, throughout the whole season, every single match live on ESPN+. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Sunday sees the quarterfinal then of the Gold Cup, the US taking on Jamaica. Just the one defeat against Jamaica in the last few meetings. That was in that friendly back in 2019. Apart from that, the US men have certainly dominated their CONCACAF rivals. Ricky Ortiz spoke to Greg Berhalter ahead of the game.
Now that you're in the quarterfinals, what do you need to see for your team to beat Jamaica on Sunday?
So, first and foremost, the level of competition steps up when you're in the knockout phase. And that's going to be really important in this whole thing. Seeing how our guys can step up to this level and really compete, because we know World Cup qualifying is the same level of intensity. And that's what we're going to need to bring to beat Jamaica. It's a good physical team, and we're going to need to match that.
And what sort of problems do you think they're going to give you?
I think their physicality is an issue. They've given a lot of teams problems with their physicality. For us, we need to be moving the ball quickly. We need to exploit the open space. And then when it comes to dealing with the physicality in the penalty box, really embracing that and competing.
Jamaica, of course, set up that clash with the US after losing their final game. The group stage is 1-0 to Costa Rica. But speaking on Football Americas, Hercules Gomez says he didn't think that is actually the end of the world for Jamaica.
I think Jamaica is secretly happy about this. I think they wanted the U.S. men's national team. I I think they were okay with not beating Costa Rica and going down this road and being on this side of the bracket, avoiding Mexico, avoiding Qatar, avoiding Costa Rica. I think they're happy here on this side.
Well, according to the bookies, the US are big favorites going into their clash. Also on Football America's Herc and Seb, we're joined by Leon Bailey to look ahead to the game.
Do you feel like an underdog facing the US men's national team?
No, I don't think, I wouldn't consider ourselves as an underdog. But, I mean, if people think we're an underdog, we win this game on Sunday, then, you know, it's a total different feeling. So sometimes it's good to be an underdog sometimes. Because, you know, I've had a lot of experience with that. People, you know, doesn't think the best of you or of your team. But when you come out victorious at the end of the night, they look at you way different. And I mean, you know, there's a lot of eyes on the Jamaica national team, and everybody wants it to be more eyes looking at us. So it would be a great thing for them to even consider us the underdog, because we are going to be victorious.
Well, Shaka, of course, earlier in the week gave us his bracket, and you have got Shaka Hislop, Jamaica beating the US.
Absolutely. I don't think this is a great United States team. As Herc himself points out, this is probably US's C team. I think Jamaica at the same time continues to go from strength to strength under their coach Theodore Whitmore, with a spine that is as good as any in CONCACAF, and Andre Blake in between the goals, Damian Lowe in midfield. You've got Leon Bailey up front. And given a lot of what this team has endured behind the scenes in some of their own kind of wranglings with the JFF, that gets resolved amicably in a way that I think serves both the team and the Football Federation in the best possible way. You then come into this tournament on the back of that, have a solid performance against Suriname, didn't play well at all against Guadeloupe in all honesty, and can probably call themselves lucky for taking all 3 points, but you play poorly and win. That's a good sign, and you take the positive from that. Whitmore then makes 8 changes, I think it was, against Costa Rica, and you lose narrowly against a team that is ordinarily third strongest in CONCACAF region. And you now find yourself in the weaker half, to Herc's point, of the bracket. Coming up against this US team, given everything that I've just said, if I'm Jamaica, I am happy with where I am. I'm happy with the opponent. And I'm looking forward to, at long last, getting the better of a US team, even if it's not their strongest.
We saw some clips there, didn't we? For the full episode of Football America's, a lot more talk looking ahead to that big game on Sunday. Be sure to check out 7 Herc here on ESPN+.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
It's quite the resume, isn't it, when you take a look at what Steven Gerrard achieved as a player. Of course, never won the league with Liverpool. Has won the league, though, as a manager, of course, with Rangers last year, stopping Celtic, making it 10 in a row. Well, on Sunday, it's Rangers against Real Madrid. Carlo Ancelotti, of course, once again, in charge of the Spanish Giants. And Mark Ogden, speaking to Steven Gerrard, talked to him about the time that Carlo Ancelotti tried to sign him for AC Milan.
He said once that he tried to sign you for AC Milan. Do you have any recollection of that?
Liverpool never brought that to me, so they must have kept that as a secret. But I did actually see the interview that he did on that, and it was obviously very flattering and very humbling, for sure. I was very happy at Liverpool. There's no way in the world any team would have got me away from there at that time. You know, I was going into the peak years of my career from a personal point of view, and I was really happy and content to try and be successful at Liverpool. But when a name like Carlo Ancelotti or AC Milan talk about, you know, wanting to have you as a player, it's certainly very flattering.
When he left Everton, that for a couple of days your name was mentioned with the job, and I don't think anybody actually thought you were going to go to Everton, but maybe the fact that Benitez has gone there is a bit of a equally surprising. I mean, how do you view that?
I don't think it's equally surprising because, you know, Rafa's not born in the city. He's not a Red through and through. He never played against Everton for 20 years and competed against them. So I think both situations are very different. You know, Rafa's his own man and make his own professional decisions. It was no surprise that, you know, he wanted to get back into the Premier League at a big club and have the opportunity to compete against all the top teams in the league. So I wasn't very shocked and surprised at all honesty, with Rafa. But I was very shocked and surprised that my name was linked to the job. I don't know where it come from, whether it was paper talk or there was any truth in it, I'm not sure. But it's never a possibility, as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, just on that, there was a quite a few big jobs came up in the summer in the Premier League. Everton, obviously, not a bit of a non-starter. Tottenham, Crystal Palace, and your name was mentioned to a lot of them, but they never really kind of got going. It suggests to me that for right now, you've got a lot of unfinished business at Rangers, and there's no real temptation to go back to the Premier League.
Well, listen, I don't think this interview was ever about me and my future or me being linked with any teams. So your question surprised me first and foremost. I'm very happy here. I've said it on numerous occasions. I'm at a huge club. I'm settled. I'm happy. I'm going to continue to develop and keep trying to push this team forward. I can't control any media speculation about my own position. I don't welcome it. I don't add to it. All I do is focus on the job I've got here, and I'm very flattered and grateful for the position I'm in.
I read somewhere that you said that last year's success brought you peace and satisfaction. Just, you know, whether it's for the job or your playing days or whatever. Can you kind of expand on that a bit, what you mean in terms of the peace and satisfaction it brought you?
Well, I hadn't won for a long time. You know, for the majority of my career, I always competed come the back end of the season to try and win trophies. I think it's been well documented that I never won the Premier League as a player. And then obviously I went off to LA, and then I started my coaching badges at Liverpool's youth team. And a lot of time had passed by with that opportunity to compete. I obviously took this job just over 3 years ago now. And that gave me the opportunity again to compete and try and get that winning feeling back from a personal point of view. And the wait was certainly worth waiting for, let me tell you, because it felt ever so good. Big relief, obviously, to get that first big trophy in the bag from a personal point of view. But obviously just reminiscing and thinking back over my own personal career, to feel that winning feeling again and get a winner's medal over your neck, it was ever so satisfying.
Can I ask you about England before you go, and what you thought of the Euros and how it went? Came very close, obviously.
Yeah, extremely close. It was obviously finger-biting stuff in that final. I thought the players were magnificent from start to finish. It was an absolute pleasure to watch them as a supporter. I was devastated that they never got over the line and got it done in the final, because I thought it would have been a fantastic reward for the whole country, you know, with everyone, what everyone's been through in the last 16, 18 months. But there's certainly no finger pointing or blame on any of their shoulders, because they've done the whole nation proud. Every single one of them, the whole squad, the coaching staff and the manager, should hold their heads up high, because I absolutely love the journey they took me on from a personal point of view, my household, my family. And you got a real special feeling about this group that this is only the start. So the future's bright as far as I'm concerned, because the talent, the style and the culture that they seem to have set is looking really strong.
Is that a thing there, to use the near miss as a kind of a launch pad? Because you look at the age of the team and the players, and there's people like Bellingham that's coming through, and Greenwood, and, you know, even Sterling and Rashford at mid-20s. By the time they get to Qatar, that 18 months of experience, am I falling into the same old situation, hyping them up again, or is there a genuine reason to believe that he can be successful?
No, I think there's been years and years gone back where the hype's gone overboard. But I think when a team delivers a semi-final and then a final, and then you look around the squad, the talent, if these players can remain humble and hungry, and we can keep developing and adding to it, I think the experiences of the tournaments can only be a benefit moving forward. I think it's important we keep Gareth as the manager, because he knows them more than anyone. He seems to have the trust of the nation as well. So for me, you can't help the hype or the optimism, because they've delivered in the last two tournaments. The only thing they've got to do next time is try and go that one step further. We know it's going to be tough, but they've certainly got the talent to do it, in my opinion.
Thank you very much for Stephen Gerrard and sitting down with Mark Ogden. Just a reminder, plenty of video content over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to go to ESPN FC and subscribe. Second season then of the Bundesliga on ESPN starts with Bayern Munich defending their title against Borussia Mönchengladbach. That game live on Friday at 2:30 Eastern. As I mentioned for La Liga, same for the Bundesliga, every single game live on ESPN+. Meanwhile, for MLS, five games for you on Sunday. All starts with the Revs against Montreal. NYCFC also taking on Orlando. Into Miami against Philadelphia Union, DC United against the Red Bulls, then the late game Seattle Sounders against Sporting KC. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Happy you came in, Shaq.
Oh, I'm delighted.
Well, that makes
happen again.
That makes two of us. Thank you very much. Be sure to stay tuned. Extra Time is next, where we talk a lot about ice cream. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Shaq are with me in the studio. You weren't supposed to be here, Shaq.
Apparently not. Nobody told me. I got a message saying to come into the studio, and then nobody told me that that message was recanted after a while.
Oh, recanting.
Is that a word?
Nadim is with us as well from his home. Sort out your background, Nadim.
It's kind of blended.
What's wrong with it? That's Jimi Hendrix. What's the problem?
Yeah, but it's
what's
just so blank. I want some memorabilia. You know,
you
some
of
your.
Can't even see Jimi Hendrix. All you can see is a frame.
That's.
I'm not shifting the camera. So you can see
you
Jimi Hendrix.
I'm going to do exactly what
you can be
what
on
I
the
want.
Side a little bit.
Maybe it's a tribute to the trophies that he won.
It's got a little Real Salt Lake, something going on down there as well.
Nadim, how is the new podcast doing? Now, if you saw it, did you have Mark Halsey on, didn't you, the former referee?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And there was some great picks that you put up on Twitter.
Point of order, though. It's not a new podcast. It's 2 years old.
Okay.
So I get it's new to him, but it is 2 years old. There's a little bit of action in there. If you want to click the link, you know, you'll find it. And there's some good content in there. Maybe I'll have you on one day, Dan. Maybe.
Now, what was interesting with the photos you put up of the referee, that I would say you're one of the more cultured footballers that we have on, yet you just seem to turn into not a nice person when a referee is involved.
It depends on the referee, depends on the moment. You know, I think you're referencing the fact that in three pictures I was pretty angry at a referee called Lee Mason.
Yeah.
And by pretty angry, I mean like I was furious. One of them, well, the one, I think there was one when I was playing for QPR and it was against Crystal Palace. And I blacked out for 10 seconds. I was that angry. Like, I completely lost the plot.
Wow.
And I look back on that. And thankfully, I found him after I retired. And you know, I've apologized since. But, you know, there were some very, very dark moments with that particular referee, mostly him.
Man. Wow.
I didn't expect that.
I know, Nadim's so calm.
I know.
And sophisticated.
Measured.
And then blacks out with his anger issues.
Hey.
That apology was empty, by the
way. Yeah.
I can tell from here.
Well, do you know what? Do you know what it was? It's because he was live on TV as well. So I was actually quite embarrassed looking back at it. But I still think the decision was very wrong. And that's what triggered me.
Oh.
But yeah, never again.
I told you your apology was empty.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry about that, but you were wrong. What kind of apologies?
Nadim, how was your holiday in a caravan?
Yeah, it was very much outside. You know, I was surrounded by dogs and things like this.
No,
basically, I was.
Dog. Oh yeah, that's right.
I was being a good father. I was being a good father because I didn't think this was a place where I would end up in my life. But there I was, and I did the right thing. And the kids had a good time. My wife had a good time. So yeah, I'm a hero. There you go.
Did you have any blackouts during that time?
Listen, I've gained closure. I'm okay now. No decision matters. I'm just trying to live my life. Dan, don't try and make me be that person again.
Right.
I have moved on. It's done. It's over.
Did you ever watch Father Ted? Did you watch Father Ted, Nadim, ever?
Cavity Priest.
I've seen Quartet, yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic. It's a great caravan episode. If you haven't seen it, check it out. Anyway, back to, what's this? Oh, we got to talk about soccer. Nainham, do defenders hate receiving instructions from goalkeepers? And what was the weirdest instruction that you have received from a keeper?
Do you know, it depends on the goalkeeper, because I've played with some who've actually got good personality, but then I've played with others where I try and pretend I can't hear them. But the weirdest, it's just like guys are saying like, just try and block it or just try and tackle it. Well, I'm like, well, of course, that's exactly what I'm trying to do. You know what I mean? But ultimately, as I say, if you find the right sort of keeper, I played with Joe Hart, a guy called Alex Smith is the name, but two, even Kasper Schmeichel, and you can have fun with them. So the stuff that they're saying is tends to be stuff whereby in the moment it looks like it's a very serious occasion, but they might just drop in a joke about something that happened a minute earlier. So they're the ones who you like to listen to.
How much would Jordan Pickford annoy you, Nathan?
He's had a good Euros, give him some bail, but he does seem a little bit on edge at times. But ultimately, I don't know him as a person, so I'm going to sit on the fence, as Shaka knows I like to do, and say, you know, I'm sure he's a great guy.
Well, the thing is with Pickford, when you see it, he's one of those who makes a save
Drives Stevie mad.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll be honest, I kind of understand Stevie's point.
Yeah.
Because it is every single time.
Mm-hmm.
It is every single time. If you do that and you make an error, then you have to expect the same kind of treatment. And he's not received that.
On the rare occasion that you made a good save, would you shout as he does?
That depends on how good the save was. I wanted everybody to be sure that I saw that. Make sure you see the save. Yep. I started running around waving my hands. Nobody knew what I was saying. It just helped, but I just wanted to highlight that I made a good save.
Cristiano Ronaldo has quite famously taken care of himself physically his whole career, which has allowed him to perform at a high level well into his 30s. Mm. What footballer would you most like to have seen do the same with their physique career? Brazilian Ronaldo, Ronaldinho, another?
Didn't Brazilian Ronaldo have health issues?
He did his name.
But wasn't there some other? Something more so than just the knee injury.
Right.
I thought it was I don't know. But yes, I would have loved to see Brazilian Ronaldo as I say repeatedly. I think he was just incredible throughout.
Yeah.
And that his career just came to an end too quickly. He was just too good.
Nathan, who would you have liked to see looked after themselves better?
Yeah, I think I'm with Shaka. I would have liked to have seen Ronaldo have a longer career because the sort of legacy that we'd have would be even greater because for us, you know, we hold him so dearly. And when you look back, he didn't actually play as many games as, say, some of these icons of today. But another guy I'd say, in terms of when he was in England, was Adel Taarabt. So this was a guy who in training had as much ability as you've seen anywhere in the league. But for when he was in England, I don't think he really cared about being that much of a professional. And it's just so sad, in my opinion, now to see that he's playing at his best in Portugal as a holding midfielder. You know, like if he would have had just a little bit more sort of desire and, you know, more a better physique and a better mentality, you know, this guy could have been an icon in England, I feel.
More Ronaldo questions. Off the back of what you said yesterday, Shaq, aside from Ronaldo winning the World Cup, what else makes him in prime better than Messi? Because prime Messi was just as good a dribbler, even better passer, playmaker and goal scorer.
Brazilian Ronaldo in full flight, I think, was more unstoppable than Messi at full flight. At their best. Listen, I get the argument about how long Lionel Messi has been doing it for. I get that. But at his best, Brazilian Ronaldo was more unstoppable than Lionel Messi at his best.
Nathan, where do you stand on this?
I understand what Shaq is saying, but I think Messi is at his peak. I think he doesn't even have the sort of physical attributes that Ronaldo had, because I wouldn't say Messi's lightning fast or incredibly strong, but his impact was still so huge. Like I prefer, in terms of a number nine, like Ronaldo, like dream number nine for me. But Messi, just as a player, I think he's just different. Like if we ever see anything like him ever again, like I think we'll be so blessed. Because even looking back, there was one year when Cristiano Ronaldo, I think, scored 46 goals in La Liga, and he was second top scorer to a number 10 in Lionel Messi, who had 50. You know, that's not normal at all.
What is the best case of a great player embarrassing another great player that they've seen? Mine is Cafu lobbing Nedved twice.
That was classic.
Yeah, that was pretty. Yeah.
That was classic. Two came to mind.
Okay.
Dwight Yorke tripping David Seaman.
Right.
Panenka. But the one for me that stood out, Zidane doing the same to Buffon, 2006 World Cup final.
Yeah.
That's just, well, you already know, everybody knows what I think about Buffon.
Yes.
You can't do that to, you can't do that to Gigi Buffon. But if there was anybody who could, it's Zidane.
Yeah.
I'm also a huge fan of Zidane. There's nobody I loved watching play more than Zinedine Zidane. So to see those two at that stage of the game as well, a World Cup final we're talking about, doesn't come any bigger than that.
Nathan?
Okay, so mine's a bit different because, say, I'm going to talk about Jerome Boateng. And Jerome Boateng, I think he's a really good player. You know, some might say he's a great player. But in one particular instance, when he was playing for Bayern Munich at the Nou Camp, and he was one-on-one with Messi, and it's the clip where Messi shapes to his left and then cuts back onto his right before dinking it over Neuer. And Boateng in that moment there, the job that he had with Messi in the open space, I don't think you'd find many players anywhere around the world that would want to swap in for him in that moment. Mm. And what he did to him where Boateng fell over, you know, I was looking at, like, I think I'm 100% sure I would have fallen over and probably made it look infinitely worse. Like, that was... That was beautiful. I remember watching from my house just thinking, no, that's just outrageous. Because again, Jerome Boateng, you know, this is somebody who was at Man City for a bit. Like, this is a really good footballer. And he was made to look like they just found him on the street by, in my opinion, you know, the greatest of all time.
Shaka, what do you make of PSG currently having 9 goalkeepers on their books? What was the most amount of keepers in one of the sides that you had?
Well, first of all, absolutely ridiculous that PSG are doing with their goalkeepers. I mean, I don't get it. I just don't. The most, I don't think I've ever been anywhere with more than 3 genuine first team goalkeepers.
Right.
I was at, but for instance, I was at Portsmouth and we had 3 genuine first team goalkeepers, but you had like the likes of Asmir Begovic coming through in the youth squad.
Right.
So, you know, it looked more than it was because of how good Begovic was, even as at that age. But, you know, generally, 3 is about average. I can't think of any club I've been at. Newcastle was just staying with Steve Harper coming through from the youth setter, but that's about it.
For Nathan, without being Manchester City biased, which manager would he prefer to play for in the Premier League if he's playing now? So you can't say City. Don't say Pep.
Mm.
Klopp.
Which manager outside of City? I guess I would say Thomas Tuchel in this. At the best, I'd say Jurgen Klopp, because he's somebody who's very, very passionate. You know, he gets his team to play in a high energy way, and you know the runs they can go on in terms of being unbeaten and so on is special. And I think if it wasn't for City, they would have won maybe a couple more titles in the years gone by. So I think I'd say him, because he made that team very, very special. But, you know, just in that particular moment, it wasn't enough domestically. So I'd say, I'd say Jurgen Klopp.
Nathan, how weird is it to cheer for Team GB in the Olympics and not just England? Got to be odd. Can't imagine all of a sudden cheering along with Mexico and Canada.
No, do you know what? It's not that odd, just because maybe you're the same as me, Dan. Like, when you watch the Olympics, you're used to cheering on GB anyway. Mm. You know, the GB football thing is a new entity, but this sentiment of supporting Great Britain is something which you've probably done for the duration of your life whilst you've been watching Olympic Games. And I don't necessarily tune into the Olympic Games just to watch football. You know, I'm more so like a track and field guy.
Yeah.
You know, and other things like that. Maybe it's gymnastics and so on. So it feels fine. But it's just a shame that, say, the male side of things can't do what the women are doing and actually put a team out. Because, you know, ultimately, as I say, it'd be another team which you can get behind and hope for the best. You know, maybe even, you know, give them a chance of winning a gold medal or winning something at the national level.
I wonder what Stevie feels, that's right.
Sorry?
Never mind you, Englishman. I want to know what Stevie feels about Team GB.
Yeah, I'd be intrigued, given his England hatred.
We know what Craig would think.
Yes. Yeah, he's not bothered. Final question. What are their favourite desserts?
Favourite desserts?
Do you know what I had when I was with Frank? Creme brulee without the brulee. Which is fantastic.
You had creme?
Yeah. Creme was good.
Why didn't you just say creme?
So is it just custard? It's you just had custard?
Exactly, but it was good custard. Why burn the top of it? Fantastic.
My favourite dessert. Bread and butter pudding.
Really? Think...
With creme brulee without the creme.
Yeah, a bit custard.
Without the brulee.
Bit creme brulee without
the brulee. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's that's... the poshest way of saying custard.
Yeah. That's... Well, you went there. Yeah, that's what I'd go for.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Sticky toffee pudding. Change.
Right.
Sticky toffee pudding.
Yes, yes.
Over
Jackie.
Bread and
yes.
butter pudding.
Right.
Yes.
Sticky toffee pudding.
Yeah.
With custard. Hot custard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Nainham's excited as well. Look at him.
Thank you, Dad. Thank you, Dad. I remember actually having that with you in the house. Thank you, Dad. Thank you. Thank you, Father.
Nainham, what are you going for?
I'm going for exactly
that.
I was hoping he was going to say it. Yes, and I'll be specific. Cartmel sticky toffee pudding, 10 out of 10.
Wow.
If you don't know, you get to know.
Wow. What about an ice cream? I love a banana split.
Yeah.
Good banana split.
Okay, Dan.
Would you go ice cream?
Yeah, good for you, Dan.
I like ice cream.
What flavor are we going?
You know what's become... Well, this might sound a bit posh here.
Right. Is it creme brulee without the brulee?
No. There's a Jenny's ice cream, goat cheese with red cherries. Look for it in your local shop.
Really?
It is well worth it.
What makes it so good?
The goat cheese or goat milk.
Yeah, it's goat cheese ice cream.
Goat ice cream, goat milk, something. I'm telling you.
Really?
From Jenny's.
Do you,
look it up.
Do you? Is it all in one go job? Do you sit there watching Bridget Jones?
Me and my wife have a fight over it.
He's changed. Chucky, you've changed.
Two spoons.
It's good.
You've changed.
It's good.
Nathan, where are you going with ice cream?
You've changed. Just not there. Wherever he's gone, I'm not going there and you'll never see me there.
Right.
I would go for, say, something like a strawberry cheesecake or something like that. A bit different. I like it.
No, I'm good.
No?
Rocky Road comes second to Jenny's.
Really?
Goat milk and...
Oh, Shaka, there's some sort of power rankings coming up now. Sweet, get that sponsored. Any sponsors out there like to join us for an ice cream top 10? That'd be good. That's it. Thank you very much, guys. ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. Be sure to join us. Shaggy Orin, again tomorrow.
Again.
Won't be as intimate, though, will it?
That's not a fault, though.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.